The Real Issue, The Real Debates, an audio series on the Lincoln Douglas debates, this time in Quincy with Rodney Davis and Douglas Wilson of the Lincoln Studies Center at Knox College. Their book, The Lincoln Douglas Debates, The Lincoln Studies Center Edition, published by the University of Illinois Press, gives us a new, more accurate record of the words and ideas expressed by Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln running for a seat in the U.S. Senate from Illinois in the summer and fall of 1858. Rodney Davis now sets the scene for the sixth debate. It was held 1 week after the Galesburg debate. It's in Quincy, Illinois, on Wednesday, October 13.
Lincoln spent that Sunday at Burlington, Iowa, as the guest of Senator James Grimes of Iowa. And it was at Grimes' house that Lincoln at least set down some of the points that he wanted to make at the Quincy debate. Quincy was the largest town of the debate sites. We might call it the metropolis of Western Illinois. It certainly was in 1858. Its population was in the neighborhood of 13,000. And it had a very ambiguous kind of identity. It was a railroad terminus, which ensured that it had connections with the East, both travel and business connections by way of Chicago. But it was also a river port, which meant that it had business connections with St. Louis and New Orleans to the south. And the Mississippi River, the Great River, was not only a highway in the vicinity of Quincy, it was also a border. Across the river west from Quincy was slaveholding Missouri. And this was a fact which was certainly demonstrated in the audience that beheld the Quincy debate. There were boatloads of people who came down from Keokuk, Iowa, and other Iowa points that were close by. And there were boatloads that came up from Hannibal and from Louisiana, Missouri, and who made their presence felt at the Quincy debate. Adams County, which surrounded Quincy, was moderately Democratic in its political orientation, but close enough that both Lincoln and Douglas might have had a hope of changing some minds and tipping the balance a little bit. But throughout all these debates, we have to acknowledge also that they were not totally speaking to local audiences, because they knew perfectly well that their speeches were being recorded and they were being read all over the state. So what they happened to say in Quincy or in any other of the debate communities would be known about elsewhere rather quickly. Carl Schurz, the German immigrant, politico, journalist, observer of American affairs, happened to ride into Quincy on the same train that Abraham Lincoln did, and he was present at the debate, and he wrote an account of them, which is really quite interesting. Although he was certainly a partisan, he was a Republican, he was anti-slavery, he thought the Democrats had put together the most gorgeous displays and demonstrations at Quincy. For the most part, they were essentially well-behaved. There's no evidence of any violence. There's no evidence of any audience ever having gotten out of hand. It is significant that there was a substantial amount in just about every one of these communities of interaction between the speakers and the audience. Sometimes that interaction might involve simply cheering or affirmations of agreement with something that one of the speakers managed to say. But not infrequently, questions would arise in the audience, and the speakers would feel called upon to respond to those questions. That happened several times in the debates.
There were no electronic media, of course, so these lively exchanges between crowd and candidate were central to 19th century American politics. How big were these crowds? Jonesboro, microscopic, less than 2,000. Alton was said to have been disappointed with 6,000, but the five other sites all claimed between 15 and 20,000 in attendance. Rodney Davis gives a historian's view of these crowd numbers.
I think there's absolutely no historical justification for any of these debate size estimates. I think they were all wildly inflated. I infer that simply from seeing outdoor audiences whose numbers are rather accurately determined, and knowing that these audiences could very well be substantially smaller than what the estimates were that partisan newspapers or partisan politicians gave to them.
Historians have differed over the effect of the partisan news reporting of the debate texts. James Sheridan and Henry Binmore covered the debates for the newspaper that supported Douglas. Horace White and Robert Hitt worked for the newspaper that supported Lincoln. Were their reports accurate? Douglas Wilson talks about the reporting.
To give you an idea of how accurate the reporting is, it's very hard to gauge. When Lincoln was accused of being part of this, getting up these radical resolutions in 1854, to confront that, he got up and read a long portion of his Peoria speech. He said, here's what I said in 54. These were my 54 positions, and he read this. So we know what he read. That's a fixed text. Well, then we can compare what they reported him as saying. It just so happens that Hitt, instead of using the what you would expect him, what they frequently did, especially for your own person, you'd simply take the thing he read from and make a record of it. But what Hitt did in this occasion was to take it down. You can tell by the fact, the inexact nature of the thing. He's got it pretty close, and I give an example in my textual introduction. He's got it pretty close, but he doesn't have it exact. He doesn't have it word for word. There's a little slippage in there. And that's what I think you have to understand, that this is the way it was reported, but there's always probably some slippage. They're always condensing a little bit. They're not getting it all. What they say, and I think this is an important thing to keep in mind, is that Douglas was very experienced in talking legibly at a reasonable pace. He was easy to take. His phrases and his clauses and his sentences were round and complete and were laid out very clearly. Whereas Lincoln, who is always thinking on his feet, frequently states a matter, then qualifies it, then restates it. And both Hitt and White talk about the fact that this is much more difficult to report. And that it isn't that he speaks too fast, it's that he doesn't have that nice, round, regular, rhythmic decision. And Douglas is almost always saying things that he said before, so he has them very clearly in mind. And, of course, the reporters have them very clearly in mind. So he's much easier to report accurately than Lincoln.
That's Douglas Wilson with Rodney Davis. They're the co-directors of the Lincoln Study Center at Knox College. Their book is The Lincoln-Douglas Debates, the Lincoln Study Center edition, published by the University of Illinois Press. Carl Schurz, the author mentioned earlier by Rodney Davis, wrote that when the debate at Quincy was over, the brass bands began to play again. Douglas and Lincoln got on a riverboat and traveled together to the seventh and final debate 2 days later in Alton, Illinois. And that's in the next segment of this audio series, The Real Issue, The Real Debates, a presentation of Knox College and the Lincoln Study Center at Knox College.